Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus King coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling, mostly, of course, giving you our Extreme Rules thoughts and the latest news at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, and of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. First, before we get started, I would like to say that it does appear that the WWE is back in full swing and really gaining interest from the wrestling universe, because I'm happy to say that our Friday show, which is normally the least listened to because of its time period and people are working and it's usually just a recap of the week, was the most listened to episode of this show, I think ever, but at least in the last 2 years. That means there is a ton of interest in Extreme Rules and the WWE again. And that has to be good news for the WWE. It's good news for all of us who do these shows, but it's also really good news for the WWE, because normally a prediction show for a WWE pay-per-view does about a third of what we, the numbers we did this week. So there was a ton of interest in Extreme Rules. Now, did it live up to the expectations? Because there were some very high expectations, folks. What with people saying Bray Wyatt was going to be appearing, maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't, would there be a reveal, what would happen, that was a key factor. There was a couple other things that people were curious about, if it would live up to expectations. I have to tell you, spoiler alert for our grades at the end, I think this did live up to expectations. Now, I do have a couple of critiques, which we'll get to match by match. But for the most part, I think this really did live up to expectations. And we started it off with Imperium versus the Brawling Brutes. And I don't think you could have started it off with a better match. This remains my favorite match all night. Everything that happened in this match is the reason I really, really enjoy professional wrestling. Everything that happened in this match is why professional wrestling was popular to begin with. It told a story. It had clear psychology behind it. Every one of the workers did their job in a perfect manner. And here's the thing that was the key, I think. On this show, we very clearly predicted not only who was going to win, but who exactly was going to lose and take the pinfall, and who exactly was going to score that pinfall. As we found it, at least as far as I'm concerned, it ended up being totally unpredictable. I knew what I had thought was the obvious prediction, but during the course of that match, there were times, four or five times, when I said, that's not what's going to happen. I'm second-guessing myself. They're going to do this. They're going to pull this. They're going to pull that. Whoever was responsible for booking that match did an absolute stellar job, because even people like me who were 100% convinced I knew the outcome, right down to who was pinning who, you threw me into a quandary where I'm saying, I guess I'm wrong. I don't think this is going to work this way. Everyone did a fantastic job in that match. I haven't heard the crowd roar like that for Sheamus. I don't know if I've ever heard the crowd roar like that for Sheamus. And I'm really happy for Sheamus, too, because this is a guy who's really busted his ass in his career for the WWE. There's a lot of people who say, Sheamus is boring, and Sheamus is this, Sheamus is that. Sheamus has always busted his ass. I've always loved his style of wrestling, which is stiff, but fun to watch. And I've always thought he did an excellent job, whether he was doing heel or face, in his promos and his presentability, everything. And I really do think that he's really come into his own, where the WWE fans are now at a point in Sheamus' career where I don't know if you can turn him heel anymore, because I think what's happened here is he's gotten that he's been here so long and there's so much mad respect for what he does that the fans are now at the point where they just say, we want to cheer him. We want to cheer him because we know he doesn't probably have a lot of the years left in his in-ring work, and we want to show him our appreciation. So the WWE has done such a smart thing by flipping that faction face. And now you see what the result is when you give the fans what they want. The fans wanted to cheer him anyway. You gave them the reason to cheer him. You presented Imperium with no reason to cheer for. And look what you got. You've got a rivalry right now that, while I won't say it's as strong a rivalry as the Von Erichs and the Freebirds or, you know, whatever, it's close. It's a modern-day version of it if you keep it going, and I think you can keep it going because every time they have a match, it's a great one. Every single time these guys get in the ring together, it's a great match. Now, here's what I think. I think the WWE figured, well, Sheamus and company is going to be a stepping stone for Imperium to come in and show some dominance, and then they'll move on to tougher competition. And then they called an audible and said, hold the phone. Maybe Imperium is a stepping stone for the Brawling Brutes to really get over big. Maybe we better slow this down. Let's not tell the story too quick. Let's just keep them feuding and see what ends up happening until the fans get sick of this, because the fans are nowhere close to sick of it. Nowhere close to sick of it. And it's really working. It's really working. This match was, in my opinion, a flawless match. I watched it twice, looking for anything that I said, okay, well, this was, and I couldn't find anything. This was a great professional wrestling match that felt legitimately out of control at times. Remember the old ECW where you knew it was predetermined, but you're like, this has gotten out of control, slightly out of control. That's what it felt like. Even the camera work where they were saying we can't even keep enough cameras on it. They're doing this over here and this over here. Everything's going, you know, on at once. Excellent idea. Sheamus popping up from underneath the bar with that almost, you know, hulking up Hulk Hogan feel to him. And Gunther instead of, you know, here's the great thing. The classic WWE rationale for that is, okay, Sheamus pops up. Gunther looks shocked and surprised and worried. Oh, my God, I thought I'd finished him off, but I didn't. No. What does Gunther do? He looks at him with disdain, like, damn, he won't stay down, and just says, come on. Come on, then. Beautifully done. Beautifully done. I can't give enough accolades to this match. It's my favorite match so far this year. I liked it better than Sheamus and Gunther by themselves at Clash at the Castle, because I think the other guys added to it. And Gunther finally showing a little bit of weakness, where he finally got put through the table and that was enough and just laid there, was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So starting it off, I have to tell you, I thought, wow, there's no way another match on this card is going to come close to competing with this. And even though I do think this was the best match on the card last night, there were a match or two that came close to competing with this. Tom, what did you think of the match?
I thought the match was great. I don't know of any other match that could have opened the show, but it engaged me, where I was like, okay, well, that was a hard-hitting, grueling match, which I honestly, like you, I live for, because that's why I love professional wrestling. And it was an amazing, everything they did made sense. Even the false finishes, I actually literally got off my chair, and I got off my seat, and I was like, oh, man, you know, I haven't done that in a while. And this is one of those things, one of those matches that had people talking, even though it's the, I guess you would consider it the undercard of sorts, it still had people talking.
Look, it really did, and Mike in the chat room, Mike can't join us today live on the phone, but he's in the chat room, and Mike is saying, it reminds me of New Day and the Usos. It does, in the sense of the rivalry, but what makes it even, in my opinion, a little bit better than New Day and the Usos is that this is more old school. There's not a lot of moves. You're not seeing a lot of, you know, drop kicks and toe holds, and no, you're just seeing flat-out brawling, and yes, there's some wrestling with suplexes and things like that, but it's just hard hitting old school professional wrestling. So what does this prove when the fans pop like this? Well, number one, it proves the fans still want to see old school heels like Imperium, where there's nothing to cheer. They're not funny. They don't have the best theme music. They don't get on the microphone and crack jokes or cut cool promos. They're just heels. And the faces in this situation aren't wimpy little, well, I'm going to do my best to try to wear them down with toe holds and my high-flying ability. No. The faces are, okay, well, you know what? We're going to stand toe-to-toe with them when I'm backing down from them. Fans loved it. What does that show you, WWE? The fans are starving for more of the old-school style wrestling. This new style that has come about, and it's been so prevalent in recent years, especially in AEW and stuff, fans have grown tired of it now, especially the old-school fans. And they're saying there's a place for that on the card, but not every match. We want to see some of this old-school, to borrow a phrase from Jim Ross, slobber-knocker-style professional wrestling, where it looks like at the end of the match, these guys have been in a match. Sheamus is the perfect guy to put in one of these matches, and I'll tell you why. Being a fellow redhead, I can tell you, when you're pale like that, it doesn't take much for your skin to turn beet red when you're chopped or you're hit or you're getting sweaty. He sweats profusely. He looks like he's exhausted when he still has plenty in the tank. That's a really good thing about Sheamus. Halfway through a match, he'll say, well, Sheamus is really housed. But he can keep going. He's not housed. He just looks like he's housed. And every chop shows on his skin. Every welt shows on his body. And that was my one thing that I didn't like about Gunther. Gunther would take a shot, and he would just, like, roll out of the ring and be like, okay, well, that was a hard shot, but I'm okay. Last night, he didn't do it so much. Last night, he really took that beating. And I just think the whole thing was perfect, Todd. I think this was probably, like I said, one of the best. It certainly was the best tag team match I've seen this year, and it might be the best overall match I've seen this year.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was more of an old-school match of a brawling. And, you know, it reminds me of the match at WrestleMania 5 with Duggan and Bad News Brown, both brawlers. In that match. It reminds me of that
when you
match.
Get these two guys, and the fans want to see more of Gunther and Sheamus. You're telling such a great story here that the fans are legitimately now saying, if you said to the fans before, we're going to bring in Gunther, and all of the indie fans and NXT fans are like, oh, great, they're bringing Walter in. I don't know why they changed his name, but I want him to be the champion immediately. I want him to beat everybody. And then you said we're going to kind of feed him to Sheamus, and he might not win. He might actually end up losing that Intercontinental belt to Sheamus. All those fans would have went and cried. Oh, they're going to ruin him. Now those same fans are like, you know, there's a part of me that wants to see Sheamus win. That's because of excellent storytelling. When you tell the proper story and you don't force it down fans' throats, you let them come to it naturally, they'll root for the right people. By telling this story very slowly, through physical combat, you now have the fans saying the only great ending to this would be if Sheamus gets his moment, where he beats Gunther and holds that belt up above his head. That's what we want to see. You're the same fans who would have complained if the WWE did this first match out. So you can be swayed by good storytelling, the magic of professional wrestling. And I don't know if I've ever seen people do it better. Now, okay, Ridge Holland is a rookie. He has his spots where he lifts both guys up and things. Pete Dunne is great at what he does, but it's really Sheamus and Walter who's telling the story. Gunther. And man, are they doing, they're just doing a supreme job. Just a supreme job. So, I mean, they really started this pay-per-view out the right way. Again, when this was finished, I said, I doubt there's anything that I'm going to see on this pay-per-view that's going to top this. I couldn't imagine what it would be. And next up we get Ronda Rousey against Liv Morgan. And I want to say this. It was probably a couple of months ago, maybe as much as three, that everybody on this panel said, Ronda Rousey become a professional wrestler. Her first run in the WWE, she was just a UFC personality cosplaying a professional wrestler. She's not a professional wrestler. Everything she did was like, it just didn't fit. And you knew what the deal was. Hand her everything on a silver platter because she's Ronda Rousey. She's almost like a celebrity but turned wrestler. Then about 3 months ago, we all said, you know, Ronda Rousey's actually turned professional wrestler. She's selling more. She doesn't have to be talked through matches like she used to. She's looking much more fluid and much more relaxed. She's getting this. She was in tough last night. I know a lot of people say, Liv Morgan's so wonderful. Liv Morgan is not that wonderful. Liv Morgan's still someone who's kind of green. And I said to myself, the old Ronda Rousey versus Liv Morgan at this stage, first run Ronda Rousey, this would have been a disaster. This would have been like a who's going to do what to who at what time, and oops, I missed that, and oops, I missed this. And these two did a phenomenal job. Liv Morgan's getting better every single match. Every match. Which is a really good thing to see. We all said that. We all said it's not that we don't hate Liv Morgan. We thought she was too green to be the champion, which I still thought she was, but I said she's getting better. She's going to be hit that level. You just got to give her a little room to breathe. She did an excellent job last night. There were some very good spots in this match. Ronda Rousey 100% has become a professional wrestler. She sells the right way. Her pacing is a million times better. Leaps and bounds. It's almost like somebody turned on a light switch. And we had speculated that the person who turned on that light switch might have been Charlotte Flair when they had their feud. Because I know they're friends, and she sold a lot to Charlotte and saw what the reaction of the fans was, which was more positive. And I think somehow Charlotte might have had a role to play in coaching her to be a little more relaxed and give a little more and make the match more exciting, because Ronda did a great job last night. She did a great job. Now, there is one part of the match that fans wanted me to comment on. Several people wrote me, and they said, why was Liv Morgan smiling or laughing as she passed out? I don't know. There's something to do. They told her to do it because the camera's close up on her face. So my presumption is something's up. I'm not sure what's up. I've been hearing she may turn heel. I'm not sure what's up. But Ronda Rousey's your new champion. This was an excellent women's match. And again, you bowl me over with a feather. Because if you would have told me you're throwing in Ronda Rousey and Liv Morgan into a match, and it's going to be really, really good, I would have laughed at you. and said, oh, come on, those two guys getting thrown into a match, it's going to be a botch fest, it's going to be this, it's going to be that. It was none of those things. They both did an excellent job. And while I don't think it was as good a match as the Brawling Brutes and Imperium, it was a really good, entertaining, and fun match. So congratulations to both of them for that, Todd. And, okay, Ronda Rousey's your champion. I think they got different plans for Liv Morgan now.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with the, that match with Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey for the SmackDown Women's title match last night, I, like you said, I was like, I'm thinking the same thing. She's smiling about something. And, well, like you said, something's up for her. And last night, Ronda Rousey looked like she was acting more heelish in the match.
Yeah, I don't know, though. I think it's going to be the opposite. I think Liv Morgan's going to be the one that turns heel. I think that smile on her face was kind of like a devious sort of, she got me, but this is never going to happen again because I got something planned for her type smile. Now, I could be wrong, but I'm telling you that when a camera is cued ahead of time to close in on somebody's facial expression, she was told to make that facial expression. So there's something in the works for Liv Morgan, Tom.
Yeah, for sure. I saw her smile like she was laughing at first, and then they cut away, and then they put it right on her again. I said, okay, there's – I was like, what the hell is the deal with her smiling? You shouldn't be smiling if you're being choked out. But, I mean, if they put the camera right on you, that's – they told her to do it. And
no question.
I think, honestly, that there's – I think she's already a heel, or the gray area, because Ronda's a clear heel. She's bucking authority. She's attacking security guards. That's not a face move.
Yeah, but it is, Tom. But it is. What was Stone Cold Steve Austin? Bucking authority, beating up security guards. You got to remember, the authority she's beating up called her a bitch. You know? So I think it's the opposite. I think clearly Ronda Rousey's the face. And that's why I said it's almost like two faces going against each other. Because the crowd, to a certain extent, for a while, was all on Liv Morgan's side. But then they started booing her. Mostly because of the way you booked her to win that title. And she blew a promo. Totally blew a promo. I don't know whether she just blew it or that's the way they wrote it. But either way, a really bad promo did her in. Where she sounded like a whiny brat saying, I never tapped out, and until after the bell rang, when clearly that's not the truth. Clearly that's not the truth. That didn't do her any favors. So I think now, I think the WWE's smart, and they're saying, okay, well, you know, Liv, don't panic. Because, man, did Liv Morgan panic when the cheers turned to boos. You could see it in her face. And she thought, Jesus, I've blown my career. Here I am supposed to be the top baby face, and the fans are supposed to love me, and now they're booing me. I blew it. And I think the powers that be that said, eh, no big deal. They want to boo you, we'll give them something to boo you about. Now, I'll tell you some of my thoughts about what could potentially be happening later, but I don't want to put any spoilers up for the end, so we'll wait. And we will go to a little bit on The Miz doing this thing with the mascot for the Philadelphia Flyers. Listen, I am so over this Dexter Lumis thing. Now, last night they did make him look a little bit more like a face because he helped out the mascot. Didn't do anything horrible to him. But there's still no explanation for why he's targeting The Miz, and it's really, really getting stale. And Dexter Lumis is a hard guy to get over because he doesn't talk. So how do you get over a face that doesn't cut a promo? A heel, you can do that. A face, that's very hard. And I don't know if they're going to, I don't know if they're going to be able to do this or not. All I know is I lost interest in it weeks ago, and my interest is no more peaked than it ever was. Karrion Kross and Drew McIntyre. Let me say this. I like Karrion Kross a lot. Mostly as a person. You know, I heard him talking on an interview, him and his wife, and they both seem to be very, very nice people. They both seem to be very hard workers and people who are very, very dedicated to their craft and genuinely care about the product. So hats off to them, because I've heard interviews with many wrestlers who don't come across that way, and they absolutely come across that way. So I believe every word they say when they say we are very much dedicated to putting out the best possible performance we can every time we get in the ring. I believe you. But the simple fact is this. There are some people who just don't work well together. And Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross do not work well together. I don't know whether it's because they have a similar style, or I don't know whether it's just because their styles clash in some way, but it doesn't work. And I felt from the very beginning it wasn't going to, and I was right. This was clearly not a great match. It wasn't a bad match, but it was the worst match of the night. And it should not have been the worst match of the night. It just didn't have a feel, and the crowd wasn't really all that into it either. And then for it to be decided in the way it was, which was basically what you did as the lead-up for Extreme Rules, was very weak. Very weak. Drew McIntyre loses another match. He has the excuse that Scarlett got in the ring and pepper sprayed him. Hats off to Karrion Kross about one thing, though. And this is why I will always say I like Karrion Kross, even if his match isn't that good. There are zero wrestlers. I won't say zero because there might be one or two. But there are very few wrestlers on this planet who would think enough ahead of time to realize if my manageress sprays that much mace into somebody's eyes, some of it might get into mine too. And for him to clutch his eyes for a minute afterwards and have her wiping it with a towel while he was grimacing in pain is a brilliant move by a guy who pays attention to detail. I have zero problems with Karrion Kross as a wrestler. I think he could be a top guy or the top guy, but he does not work well with Drew McIntyre, and that's just as simple as that. And I love Drew McIntyre, and I've seen him in matches that I said, God, he's got the crowd in the palm of his hand. He's fantastic, and I'm very surprised to tell you he's top merchandise seller, the top merchandise seller, above the Bloodline. Just found that out. So both of these guys are on a fast track to being the guys and big main event guys, but they just don't work that well together. The pacing is weird. They sell a little and then they sell a little to the other guy, and then it goes. There was no real feel of a big comeback. There was no real feel of, I don't know. It just felt stale. It just didn't feel to me anyway. And I'll let the rest of the guys speak for themselves, but it didn't feel to me like an important match or a match that I was excited about, Tom.
I'm glad that you commented on Karrion Kross having the pepper spray wiped from his eyes, because that made sense. I don't know. I didn't think anybody else would catch that. I mean, I know you would, but the majority of fans probably didn't.
Right.
And it was a brilliant move, because that is very detailed and something that not many would think of, because that was a lot of pepper spray or a lot of mace or whatever it was, hairspray, I don't know. And it made sense, and it also extended the branch, because now who knows what's going to come of that. Unfortunately, and I agree with you that the chemistry between those two is not very good, and not to mention the fact that it was not a strap match. Strap match, he touched off the corner.
Right. No, it wasn't. Yeah, and he took the strap off at some point in the beginning. So. But you're absolutely right about the pepper spray, because you see, if you did that, if you pepper sprayed the open air like that, and she did it like a lot, she scored it like six times. The logic would be if you squirted it once, maybe it wouldn't get into the air. But you squirt it that much, it's certainly going to get into the immediate air. Now, she didn't sell it. which could be a mistake because it should have gotten her eyes too. But he made really close contact with McIntyre when he pinned him. So to make really close contact with him, you're going to get a little of that offshoot of that pepper spray. And you're absolutely right. There's not a handful of wrestlers on this planet who would have thought to themselves, oh, I have to sell a little of that pepper spray too. It would certainly, the aftershot would get in my eyes to some extent. It just made McIntyre look better even, because you say, well, if that little bit caused Cross to be in dire straits for a minute, look how much McIntyre took. So kudos to Karrion Kross for doing that. That absolutely shows that you're paying attention to detail and you're in the game. But they just don't work well together, and sometimes that happens. You can get two wrestlers who are really good, and the chemistry's not there. And the McIntyre-Cross chemistry isn't there. I think they need to move on, both of them, to different opponents. But Todd, hey, it was okay. It wasn't terrible.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Oh, you're absolutely right there. In that match with Karrion Kross and Drew McIntyre, it was like a missed match there. And when they had the strap match last night, I was hoping they'd do like the touch the four corners, drag your opponent around the ring and touch four corners and to win the match. But was this like a plain old match?
Yeah, it was. And they both worked hard. I'm not taking anything away from either of them. Again, let me reiterate, I think Drew McIntyre is an excellent wrestler and I'm a fan. I think Karrion Kross is an excellent wrestler and I'm a fan. And I give them all the props in the world for what they did do, but the chemistry's not great. And there's no – when you look at Gunther and Sheamus, you're like, the chemistry's fantastic. There's an electricity there when they go against each other. And you would hope that that's what you would get from McIntyre and Kross, but it's unfortunate. It's definitely unfortunate. But still, it was okay. I'm not saying it was a horrible match. I'm just saying I think it was the worst match of the night. We then get to what I thought was going to be the worst match of the night, and I'll tell you why, which is Bianca Belair versus Bayley for the ladder match. Bayley had been, away for a long time. She hadn't had a lot of warm-up matches. The warm-up matches I did see her have, I was not impressed. And I said, I really feel she's lost a few steps. And I don't know. I don't know how this is going to fly, especially if it's a longer match. And man, was I wrong. They put on a very, very good ladder match. Very good ladder match. And some of the things Bayley did really surprised me. The elbow drop on the ladder outside surprised the hell out of me. They also paid great attention to detail. They didn't undersell or oversell certain spots. Bianca Belair did something that I said, thank God somebody finally does it in a ladder match. She ran up that ladder in the early stages of the match like a squirrel running up a tree. And I always say that about a ladder match. I'm like, Jesus, these guys are athletes. They've only been in the match 3 minutes. They're not hurt yet. They set up the ladder, and they're walking up it like they're walking the plank. How slow could you possibly be in climbing a ladder if you're athletic? And Bianca Belair finally did the good thing. She scurried up that ladder. Bayley took a little more time. Well, she has a knee injury, or had a knee injury. Even the attention to detail when the knee brace fell off and stuff, very good. And there were really good spots in this ladder match, really good. Bianca Belair ended up looking like $1 million. Now, I know there's going to be fans who say, look, she took on the whole entire damage control by herself and won. Yeah, I know. That was probably not the best idea. That does hurt damage control. If one woman can literally wipe them out, then that probably does hurt them. But, man, the match was so good, I can't really complain all that much. So, again, I was pleasantly surprised, Tom. I thought this was second-best match of the night. I really did. I thought they both did an excellent job.
I think they did an excellent job, and some of the things that were a were a botch were not really, like, the chair didn't stay in the chair didn't stay where it was supposed to when they set it up, and also the announcer's selling that Bailey's grabbing at her knee and she takes out the hinge, and
right.
I thought that was brilliant. Now let me touch on what you said about Bianca Belair giving the finisher to both of the damage control cohorts there. That I think, and they were out for like 10 minutes. I don't particularly agree with that. I think that was ill-advised, because if one person could take out the two of them and then beat their top person, their leader, where do they go from there? That doesn't make. I think that was ill-advised, and also, you know, again, that's the only complaint I really had about that match. But I loved absolutely everything they did in this match, as far as their moves and their flow and everything in that match, especially the last thing that Bianca Belair gave the finisher on the ladder, and it looked
on
like
the ladder,
it
yeah.
Down.
Yes, and you saw Bianca Belair's back, too, from some of the slams on the ladder, and she clearly had marks on her back. They fought hard. And Mike in the chat room is saying, you know, Bailey looks a little chunky. She does. Bailey's gained weight. But, man, she's still very athletic. She did a whole bunch of stuff in that match that I said, oh, I didn't think she was going to do that. I didn't think we'd see this from Bailey or that from Bailey or whatever. So hats off to her. She kept up with the athleticism of Bianca Belair, and I thought that would never happen. I really did. I thought that was never going to happen. Second best match of the night, in my opinion, Todd. I think they did an excellent job.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was the second best match of the night between Belair and Bailey. And you'd notice in that match, they did some false finishes to climb the ladder and to grab the Raw Women's Championship, and the two other members of Damage Control got involved, tried to help Bailey to win the Raw Women's Championship, and you know it was the second best match of the night, and I agree with you on that one, and that's my thing on that.
I think though that, you know, Tom is right, and this is going to come back to haunt the WWE again when we talk about the next match. You cannot say Damage Control is the main faction, the, you know, top of the line in the women's division, and then have one woman literally wipe them out, because it undermines their credibility. And now you can say, well, I guess Bianca Belair could be tag team champion all by herself. She beat them, no problem. They ran down fresh. She wasn't even fresh. They run down totally fresh, get their ass kicked at the same time. That is ill-advised, because I think it undermines Damage Control. I mean, people are going to say, well, what do you want them to do? Well, I don't know, but maybe don't run down. Or if you have to run down, isn't there somebody else who could have stopped them besides Alexa Bliss and Asuka, who's supposed to be hurt? Isn't there anyone there who could have helped out Bianca Belair a little bit, or maybe one runs down at a time or something? I don't know. So that was a little bit of a flaw. So let's go to the next match, which is Finn Balor versus Edge in an I Quit match. I don't know why I didn't think of this, but I swear to you all, 5 minutes into this match, I said, I know what's going to happen. They're going to somehow threaten his wife. His wife's going to get involved, and they're going to threaten his wife, and he's going to quit. That's the only thing that's going to save face here. Finn is not going to quit. I knew right away when Finn was getting beat up bad in the beginning and Edge was taking 80% of the beginning of the match, I said, Finn's not losing. So how will we get Edge to submit? And I said, Beth Phoenix is going to be here somewhere, especially when the rest of Judgment Day ran down. Here is my huge, gigantic, glaring problem with this match. The ending certainly is good if you want to continue this feud. and put branches on the tree. But whoever booked this match made one critical error. At the closing stages of this match, Edge hit Finn Balor not with one, not with two, but three spears, which is his finisher. His finisher that has pinned legendary names. And not 40 seconds later, Finn Balor is climbing the turnbuckle like he was never hit with a thing and giving Edge his finisher three times, to which Edge does not recover. So basically you've destroyed Edge's finisher, because if he can't finish off a 165-pound man with it after hitting him three solid times, and you can't even keep him down for a minute, then that's not much of a finisher. And that finisher was always Edge's best move, the move that next to nobody kicked out of. I hated that part. That's a very, very, very bad way to undermine his finisher. Don't let him hit him with three. Let him hit him with one. Why three if you're going to have Finn have to climb the buckle like he's not hurt? Whoever's booking that match knew, well, the finisher is going to be Finn climbing the buckle to do his bombs away. Okay, well, then don't give him three spears. Don't do it. So I have a big problem with that. Now, Rey Mysterio and Dominic are doing a good job. If they continue this, there's certainly going to be a lot of interest in Rey Mysterio versus Dominic Mysterio, and that's what's coming. So that branch on the tree is clearly there. Clearly, Beth Phoenix is going to want revenge on Rhea Ripley, so that branch on the tree is there. Damian Priest has no branch on his tree. I don't know what's going to happen with him. And Edge is probably going to want some revenge on Finn Balor again. No AJ Styles, which is good. Maybe there's going to be some kind of connection between him and Edge and Rey. I don't know. That could be a possibility. I do know that Dominic's getting over as a heel, which I don't know how. I guess because he has the audacity to beat up on his own dad. So if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. But that's fine. It doesn't work for me, but it looks like it's working for other people. So that's okay. My only drawback of this match, which I thought was a good match, Tom, is that I just don't think you can let him hit three spears on a very small Finn Balor, and it really doesn't seem to have that much effect. I think that's a huge mistake.
Well, to be honest with you, Marcus, I actually hated this match from Jump Street. When Finn came out, I was like, what the hell is he wearing? What is he, a gimp?
Yeah.
I think the coolest mistake, One-Eyed Pete. Has some kind of mask on. That's great. He's never done that before. That didn't make any sense.
Tom, I think they took Karrion Kross's old mask and just reworked it.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that's a good point. It was dumb. That was dumb. Just as dumb as him wearing the purple bandana around his head like he's a gang member. Edge hits him with three spears, and he completely no-sells, and then climbs to the top rope and gives his dumbass of a finisher three times, like the spear didn't hurt him. The spear nearly killed John Cena. It killed Mick Foley, who's a legend. But I didn't see The Undertaker get up right away and give him the tombstone and the last ride. I mean, come on. You gotta be kidding me. If you're going to do that, if you're going to have Edge hit him with the finisher, maybe the execution, maybe like the flapjack, something like a wear-down move, not his finisher. And it just, you know, I knew that Beth Phoenix was going to get involved, and I knew that something was going to happen. I just didn't think the concerto was going to happen anyway, even after he quit. I didn't think it was going
to. I know they wanted to get all the heat. Right. I know they want to get all the heat on the Judgment Day, and that's a great way to get heat on Judgment Day and a great way to keep the heat on Rhea Ripley, so I'm good with that. But I would not have ever let Edge hit Finn Balor with three spears. And I think what I might have done is have Edge try for the second spear and someone push Finn out of the way and he hit his own wife. And that way he'd be in shock. Oh, my God, what did I do? And then when they gang jump him, he's already, you know, perplexed of, oh, shit, look what I did. And then they threaten his wife and he says, well, I've already hurt her. I quit. Let me, you know, I quit. I think that would be better. Yeah, you still got to threaten the concerto and all that. But let him accidentally do that, and it would have made sense that, okay, Finn recovered, but it took him a minute to recover while Edge was like, oh, my God, I just accidentally speared my own wife. Then if you say, well, it took Finn 2 minutes to recover, the other guys were beating him up for a good 2-3 minutes, and Finn very gingerly climbs to the top, still holding his rib cage. Okay, but you were given three, and you climbed to the top like nothing. This is the difference, and this is why I don't like Finn Balor. I'm telling you, I've never liked Finn Balor as a wrestler. I think he's one of the most overrated wrestlers I've ever seen because his ring psychology is about zero. Rewind back to Karrion Kross, who's smart enough to sell pepper spray that wasn't sprayed in his eyes because he realizes it would get in the air. And now imagine Finn Balor not even having the ring psychology to say, if I got to climb this, I got to do it holding my rib cage, acting like I can barely climb because I just got three spears from a legend. He didn't do it. He didn't do it. So, I mean, you know, are we going to complain if somebody just pops up from three of his bombs away and just gives him a, you know, choke slam and finishes him off? Then all the Finn Balor fans will say, they know, Sace knows, so Finn, and it made Finn look stupid. Well, this made Edge look stupid. And I don't mean made him look stupid in the sense that, well, he quit and now it's a big feud. No, it just made his finishing maneuver, which he is a Hall of Famer, look ineffective and weak. And that is a huge mistake. And whoever booked that, and I'm so surprised that Edge and Finn didn't say, I don't like that. I don't like that part of this match. But at least Finn could have climbed that buckle, holding his rib cage, doing it very slowly, acting like he's in pain, wincing in pain. He didn't do any of that. Finn Balor's ring psychology is zero. It's always been zero, and that's why I don't like him. Is he a good athlete? Of course he's a good athlete. But he doesn't have any ring psychology. He wrestles guys who are 6'8", 380 pounds, the same way he wrestles guys who are 5'8", 180. And you can't do it. Now, he's a buddy of Triple H's, so he's going to get a big push. It's not going to work because he doesn't have the charisma to make it work. Simple as that. I warned everybody that Liv Morgan didn't have that. Remember when I told you? I said she's not going to work as champion. Because she's actually annoying. She's a beautiful woman. And fans take to her because she has that childlike innocence thing about her. But boy, when she gets on the microphone, she sounds like somebody yelling at her husband to, you know, park the car. And I'm like, I can't listen to that. That's annoying. Just like I'm telling you Hit Row is annoying. Just like I told you Humberto Carrillo is annoying. I'm telling you right now, you get that kind of thing with Finn Balor, and it's like go-away heat. It's not good heat because it's like it's just annoying. It's annoying to watch, you know, no psychology, no ring psychology, no charisma. He doesn't have any charisma. And wearing that stupid mask, it looks like they just spray-painted Karrion Kross's old mask. Somebody in WWE must have said, we paid good money for that mask. And Kross ain't wearing it no more. And Finn must have said, well, maybe I'll wear it and change me image. I'll be a big, tough guy. I don't think so. a great professional wrestler, whether he's told to do it or not, would have said, I've just received three spears from a legend who's, that was his finishing maneuver through his entire career to the point where legends went down to defeat with one. Climb this thing to finish him off like the script says, I got to look like I'm in tears and I'm just about dead to the world. You didn't do it. And to me, that means, Todd, I just don't think he's that good.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I just didn't like the match that much. And when Finn Balor came out, he was wearing a joust mask, like a knight joust mask from the back in the knight days.
Yeah, and Mike is asking, do you think we're going to get a Finn Balor-Roman Reigns match? I hope not. We already got that. We got the demon. He beat the demon. And none of these people have the charisma to go up against the bloodline. Can you imagine Finn Balor standing next to Roman Reigns trying to trash talk him? At least Damian Priest has the size. Finn don't even have that. So what are you going to do? You're going to have Dominic Mysterio, the Mighty, Damian Priest, and Finn Balor standing next to the Usos and Solo Sikoa and Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns, trash talking them? And it won't work. It won't work. It will not work. So I hope that does not happen. Anyway, some people liked this match, some people didn't. Did I think it was a good match? I thought it was an okay match. I have real problems with that beer thing, real problems. And I don't know who booked it. I'm not even blaming Finn to some extent. Someone wrote that. And Finn Balor said, okay, I take three spears, I get it. And then after a minute of selling it, I get up and do mine. But Finn, how long have you been wrestling? Could you at least continue to sell it? I hate when professional wrestlers do that. I hate when pro wrestlers are like, oh, he took a chair and he put my arm on the steel step. And he smashed it 72 times with a steel chair, and I'm screaming in agony with my left arm, and then 2 seconds later, I'm doing a handstand into the corner with my left arm. Okay, well, then that's just dumb, and that's horrible ring psychology. And Finn Balor epitomizes that to me, and that's why I'm not a big Finn Balor fan. Okay, anyway, let's get to the main event of the evening, folks. Matt Riddle versus Seth Rollins in what they call the fight pit. You've seen it before. You're an NXT fan. I hate this type of match. Number one, it doesn't make any sense. You've got a second floor. Why? You can't get out of the cage. That doesn't make you win. You can't pin someone, or you can't pin someone in the whole match. And if you knock them out and they're up on top, you can't count them out. So why does that second tier exist? Now, these two guys are great, and they're both great professionals, and they're both great athletes. But they're caught in a match which is pretty lame. I don't like the concept of this match at all. I don't think it leads to exciting matches. Daniel Cormier in there. And listen, all due respect to Daniel Cormier, I'm sure he could still choke me out. But he's gained 300 pounds, and for them to say he's one of the toughest men on the planet, yeah, well, at a pie-eating contest, maybe, currently. And I don't think they played up enough this situation where he's a big Seth Rollins fan. I thought they were going to do that. I thought they were going to have it look like, oh, they did it once, but I thought they were going to do it a lot more with Cormier appearing to favor Seth Rollins and then, in the end, laying it down the middle. Didn't happen. Didn't happen at all. There was a couple of spots. Here's what you never do. At least you shouldn't do. And both Riddle and Seth Rollins should know better, and whoever booked the match. You never tease a spot that's going to be so much of a high spot that the fans are going to stand up for 5 minutes and chant, holy shit, and then don't do it. And that's and then have the announcer sell it. Corey Graves, when Seth Rollins picked up Matt Riddle for like that powerbomb position, clearly thought they were going off the cage, going off the top of the structure onto the mat. Clearly he thought that. Because he said, oh, my God. And then he just threw him into the corner. And he's like, oh, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. Then he realized he shouldn't have said it and said, I thought, well, never mind what I thought. Yeah, well, the fans thought that too. So that spot becomes lame because you teased something great and gave something average. You did have one part in the match where I thought it was fairly good booking, and that was Daniel Cormier did not count out Matt Riddle when he gave him the stomp. He's just standing there asking if he's okay, and they're saying, look, he could have counted to 11 by now. Good point, because Seth Rollins can hang his hat on that. I'm sure that was written, and Rollins will mention that. But overall, these two guys, despite the fact that I really don't think they like each other, they always have pretty good chemistry. Surprisingly enough, this time not so much. It was okay. I just don't think the type of match was great for them. Just don't think it worked great for them. It certainly wasn't the best match of the night, and it was the main event. I don't think it – if the pay-per-view had ended there, I think the fans would have said, yeah, it ended with a whimper more than a bang. Not that these two guys didn't put it all out online. Again, they did. But the structure itself, the rules of the match, I just don't think it leads to an exciting match most of the time. So what do you got there? I mean, okay, I guess it's the end of the Seth Rollins-Matt Riddle feud. They're one apiece. I guess that's the way it's going to stay, I guess. I wasn't overly thrilled with this match, Tom. It was okay, but it just didn't do it for me.
I guess I was the only one who thought that there was no way Matt Riddle wasn't going through that cage. It made it look like it, but I knew they weren't going to do that. It's way too dangerous. There's nothing down below to break his fall. What was going to break his fall? The crowd was going to catch him and crowd surf him? I didn't think he was going through, and then for having the announcers to sell it, or Corey Graves to sell it like that, there was no way that was going to be a Mick Foley moment.
I didn't think he was going through, Tom. I thought he was going to powerbomb him off of the balcony there onto the mat. Much like Matt Riddle jumped and did his finisher to Seth.
I think that Corey Graves was selling that he was going to, because when he did give the buckle bomb into the top of the cage, the cage did, it looked like the cage shifted a little bit or just rattled a little bit. Corey Graves sold it like he was going to do like a, you know, King of the Ring 98.
See, I don't think so. I think Michael Cole realized that Corey Graves had thought he was coming off onto the mat and tried to correct calling for a bigger spot than happened by saying, oh, Shades of Mick Foley, we thought he was going to go through the cage. That was kind of trying to correct the mistake that Corey Graves had made by teasing, oh, he's going to get powerbombed off the ledge onto the mat. That's what I really think happened. So kudos to Michael Cole if he did that. Because I know he mentioned Mankind or whatever, or Mick Foley. So I think he was trying to adjust Corey Graves' perspective there. Because I think Graves knew he made a mistake. Because I think he legitimately thought they wrote that spot in. And then when he realized, oh, they didn't, he realized, oh, my God, I undersold their move by almost calling a bigger one. Look, both these guys I like. And I will say forever, I'm not a big Matt Riddle fan, you know that, as far as a person. But I will say this. Matt Riddle allowed Seth Rollins the freedom to call him out on stuff that a lot of people would have said, don't mention that. We don't need to bring that into pro wrestling. So kudos to him for being able to do that. Kudos to Seth Rollins for forgiving the nonsense that really happened backstage with Matt Riddle's wife at the time and being able to work with a guy he clearly still says in interviews, I'm not a fan of. I don't really like him as a person. I know he's a great athlete. I don't like the way he does business. That's what Seth Rollins has said. I know how good he is. There's no question. I just don't like the way he does business. Congratulations to those guys for putting it aside. They do have chemistry. But this kind of match, it's just not, I don't know. It doesn't appeal to me. It just doesn't appeal to me. So I thought it was a little bit of an anticlimactic end to the pay-per-view, Todd. But once again, you know, it ended the feud, so it is what it is.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with that the double cage pit fight match. This didn't make any sense to me. Last time we saw that in the WWE is with Ken Shamrock and Owen Hart looked like it was in an actual octagon pit fight.
Right. Right.
I'd rather have that.
So then, folks, what happens? The big surprise. The lights dim. All of the cell phones come out. And we hear he's got the whole world in his hands, which I did not expect. Get to maybe hear the old theme song or whatever. I did not expect to hear that he's got the whole world in his hands. And then very clearly, we are shown not the puppets, but actual people representative of the puppets. We're showed Huskus the Pig. We're showed the Vulture. We're showed Ramblin' Rabbit. We're showed Sister Abigail. And we're showed the Fiend. Then we're showed Bray Wyatt. By the way, I don't know if you caught this, but Sister Abigail was wearing the old mask that the Bludgeon Brothers, Luke Harper, had worn. So that was kind of a tribute to Luke Harper that Bray Wyatt threw in there. It was the Sister Abigail. Yeah, it was the Sister Abigail representative who was wearing the old Luke Harper Bludgeon Brothers mask. This is clearly in reference to the Wyatt Six. So I'm going to tell you that there obviously is going to be a faction. And I guess some of these characters are either going to just be in his skits or maybe some of them are going to wrestle. I don't know. I'm being told that we were right when we said that he probably held out for his brother to come back because I'm being told that Bo Dallas is making his return to WWE. And some people are saying, which we called for a year ago, that maybe the gimmick is going to be Bray Wyatt was never the Fiend, Bo Dallas was. And that maybe it's Bo Dallas who's going to wear the Fiend mask from now on, and Bray is simply going to be this incantation of Bray. Either way, it does look like the Wyatt Six is a real thing. And it looks like he's going back to his cult leader gimmick, but he's still paying homage to the Funhouse. Now, this is going to be interesting to see how they work this, because that Bray Wyatt that carried the lantern and saying he's got the whole world in his hands, never hosted the Funhouse. Never had any interaction with any of those puppets or any of that. And we did not see that incantation of Bray Wyatt. We saw the original. So this is going to be fascinating. Did you hear the roar of the crowd? It was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. Ain't no way to make him a heel. And then if that's not proof enough that you can't make him a heel, Bray Wyatt's too smart to do this if he knew he was going to be a heel. Some guy apparently tweeted, I allowed my daughter to stay up way past her bedtime all night because she's such a big Bray Wyatt fan. She didn't want to miss his appearance if he showed up. And he showed up, and she was not disappointed. And Bray Wyatt actually tagged the guy in a tweet and said, this is why I do this, and I've missed all of you too. That doesn't sound like a heel. So something's up. My presumption is he's going to have to be a face because the fans aren't going to boo him. And then Alexa Bliss tweeted, I've missed, welcome back, my friend. So that doesn't sound like it's going to be any negative interaction with her either. I don't know where they're going with this, but that's the beauty of the Bray Wyatt thing. You never truly know exactly where they're going with anything they're doing. You have an idea, but it could change on a whim. Who the hell would have ever predicted that Bray Wyatt would make his appearance coming out singing he's got the whole world in his hands? No one that I know of. We never even considered that. Let alone that all of the puppets were going to be portrayed as real people now. Really brilliant stuff. And that's the beauty of the Bray Wyatt character, is it's impossible to really predict accurately what's next, because it's sort of just chaos. You're not 100% sure where anything's going at any given time. I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up on Monday Night Raw as the Funhouse guy. You don't know where he's going with any of it. And sometimes I think he doesn't either. Sometimes I think he just plays it by ear on purpose because it's easier to, you know, fool the fans that way. But he's got, listen, this guy's got something special. This is not your average professional wrestler. Is he great in the ring? No. But it does not matter, because he's got that intangible talent for captivating an audience with the things he comes up with and the way he portrays his character. Infinitely better than somebody's perfect super kick in professional wrestling. And he's got that intangible, probably more than, I don't know if there's anybody else in the WWE, I'm going to say no, that has that. I think he's the number one guy for that. And you're going to get a lot out of him. I have an idea what you're paying him, which is a ton. But I think it's worth every penny, because I think you're going to get this back in spades. I really do. I think you're going to get this back in spades. What's your thoughts on the Bray Wyatt return, Tom?
My God, Marcus, I couldn't agree with you more. I didn't think the whole world in his hands was going to be sung. I knew when the lights went out, special was going to happen. And I got chills talking about it, because that crowd was electric. I thought the roof was going to blow off the Wells Fargo Center. And the fact that they flashed to each one of the characters, and the crowd cheered as soon as they panned on them. And they did that several times. The one thing that really got me that got a chuckle is that, and I don't know if it was a nervous chuckle, but it might have been, that they had some kind of head on the announce table, and both announcers freaked out.
Right.
Which was great. They sold it very well. And you see the Fiend, that if the crowd didn't react immediately and explode right when it first started happening, when they panned on the Fiend, man, I got chills right now thinking, hey, talking about it. It was amazing. And honestly, I don't think there's a wrestler in the business, honestly, that could top that, or that has that kind of psychology to get those fans so engaged. You don't know what's going to happen next. Everybody's talking. And you know every single one of those fans was waiting until the end because Bray Wyatt was going to appear. That was...
Look, there's no question. And I was talking to somebody about it earlier today, and I said, whoever's invented it, whether half of it's Bray Wyatt and half of it's somebody else, I don't know who actually sat down and invented the Fiend. I know Bray Wyatt had a lot to do with it. But you have actually invented a pop culture icon. You may well have invented Freddy Krueger or Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees. That's how engaged people are with the Fiend. It's not even about wrestling anymore. It's a pop culture icon. You created it. And fans love it. And you're going to get so much mileage out of this, business-wise. Are you going to get great, great five-star matches? No. But it does not matter, because I'm telling you, what the fans want from Bray Wyatt is what they saw from Bray Wyatt last night. They want those skits. They want those moments. And because Bray Wyatt does not treat fans like they're stupid, and all of his skits and all of his little interactions always have some meaning that you have to really look behind, fans appreciate him and say, okay, he's not talking to us like we're a bunch of yokels living up on a farm in Appalachia going, oh, that damn friend is all going to get things, what's coming to him? No, he really understands, I'm engaging this crowd. I'm making them invest mentally in this character. I'm making them look for clues. I'm making them interpret my actions, interpret the things I say and the images I use. And because he's not treating them like they're stupid, they're starting to become very engaged in his character and his creativity. And what you heard at the roar of that crowd isn't because they're waiting for him to put on a five-star wrestling match, because they know he's not going to. What you heard from the roar of that crowd is they're waiting for his next creative venture because they know they're going to love it. They know they're going to run out and buy the T-shirts. They know they're going to run out and buy the masks. They know they're going to, you know, get a chill up their spine when he does certain things. That's the beauty of professional wrestling. Say what you want about all the stuff that goes on in the ring. There's tremendous athletes in professional wrestling. But what you see from Bray Wyatt, that's the foundation that wrestling is built on. The creativity, the characterizations, the idea that it's a larger-than-life thing. You heard the audience. You heard the roar of that crowd, Mike. It's, you know, you can't argue that.
Yeah, you can't argue that. And you know what? They spent a lot of time showing bits and pieces of the Funhouse, right? So that tells me, you're talking about the Wyatt Six, that tells me that we could be getting a separate guy, another guy playing that Funhouse guy.
You never know. Let me tell you this, though, Mike. This federation, the WWE, thought so much of the Bray Wyatt character returning that he technically was the main event. They didn't put him in the middle. They didn't tease him before the main event. He was after the main event in the ring. He literally was the main event on a pay-per-view that you could argue is an A pay-per-view, if not better than an A pay-per-view, and they thought so much of him that they said, we're going to make him technically the main event.
Absolutely. What did I tell you when I was texting with you earlier, you know, over Facebook. I said, I put it to you this way. Remember when you were in grade school, elementary school, and you did really, really well? It wasn't just an A+. It was an A+ with a gold star. That's what this right. pay-per-view was, A+ gold star pay-per-view. I'm willing to overlook some of the tiny mistakes they did because on the whole, it was that good on the whole.
Yeah, well, and again, when you get to the Bray Wyatt thing, you've left fans with a big question mark. Are these puppet characters who are now apparently real people, are they going to wrestle? Some of them didn't look very big. Are they not going to wrestle? They're just going to be characters in his universe, and he's going to be talking to them and or whatever. We don't know. Is somebody else going to be the Fiend? Could you actually see Bray Wyatt and the Fiend in the same ring? We don't know. See, every time Bray Wyatt gives you an answer to a question you were waiting for, he poses another question. That's the brilliance of the Bray Wyatt character. The payoff is there, but it leads to another question. So you're always looking for the next answer. It's not, okay, there's the big payoff and all that stuff that you saw before, that's over with now. Now you know what's going on and everybody knows and everything's fine. No, there's always, up. Oh, but what about this? Oh, but you didn't answer this question. That's what a soap opera does. You ever notice that? Or a continuing drama series, like a Game of Thrones or whatever. They will answer the one plot line and you say, oh, I was waiting for the conclusion of this particular plot line. That happened on this episode, but while that plot line was concluding, two or three other ones opened up. So you're always saying, I have to see the next show. I have to see the next show. It's never, okay, that was over, and now I don't have to worry about it because that's the only thing I was interested in. No, that's not good writing. The good writers say, of course we have to conclude this plot line. You've been waiting a long time for it. But as we're concluding this plot line, we're opening up another one that's going to hook you. And when you see the conclusion of the plot line you were waiting for, you're already going to say, oh, yeah, but what about the other thing that happened? I got to find out about that. That's the genius of the Bray Wyatt character, Mike.
It is. And here's something else to think about. The music they use. Why did they use He's Got the Whole World in His Hands? He's got other music you could have used there. But there's a reason. You got to ask yourself, why did and he got a reaction. He got the exact reaction that he got the last time they used it. Remember?
Yes.
When they were singing it. When they were singing it with the kids and the young set of kids and John Cena, he got that exact reaction that he got the last time, an explosion.
Sure did. And again, if you watch that, and I've watched it a few times, the funhouse looked like it was destroyed, like the puppets were laying all over the place. It was black and white. It looked like the sets were crushed. So I don't know whether he means, Tom, that that's the end of the funhouse and now the characters are alive, or it means there's something, it's going to be reborn. I'm not sure what he means by it. So, again, he answers one question and three more come up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That threw me off, too. I was actually going to bring that up. You know, the funhouse was in black and white. The characters were hanging all over the place. I have to compare Bray Wyatt's genius to, if you take Raven, Jake the Snake Roberts, The Undertaker, and Cactus Jack and roll it up all into one, that's Bray Wyatt, because you just never know what's going to happen next. And do you know how many people you got to hand this to, the WWE, for making this dead last pretty much the main event, not pretty much, but the main event of the evening that made it a plus and a star, like my, is that not only did they make it the main event, and every single one of those fans engaged and watching on pay-per-view were engaged, but you know how many people are going to watch Monday Night Raw?
And that is exactly what we speculated on. I said, if they're going to bring Bray Wyatt out, you've got to do it in a way that people say, I got to tune in to Raw. And they are definitely going to tune in. But we don't know if Bray Wyatt's going to be a Raw guy. If he's going to be a Raw guy, I don't know what the hell you're going to do, because you've already got this supposedly spooky Judgment Day guys running around over there. They're going to look like small potatoes compared to him. So you're going to have them undermined to the nth degree. If he goes over on SmackDown, it might be better, but then you got to wait till Friday. Or maybe he's going to tease he's on both. I don't know. See, that's the thing. We don't know. I've really been a bit of a wrestling historian, and I'm telling you that throughout history, there have been some very, very good creative people who could engage an audience. Jake Roberts is one of them. Who could engage an audience like very few. Raven, you mentioned, is another one. I'm not sure I've ever seen anyone with the creativity and the sense of entertainment value in professional wrestling better than Bray Wyatt. I'm not sure I have. He seems to be able to understand that wrestling is not a sport. It's a pop culture phenomena. And if you're going to appeal to the mass market pop culture phenomena, the people who collect Funkos, the people who buy band t-shirts, the people who attend Comic-Con conventions, the people who watch, you know, anime and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have to engage them with pop culture things. And he's so good at it. The horror film fan. People go to the horror film convention. All of these people love Bray Wyatt because he brings a little bit of that into everything. Now, the wrestling purist who says, well, I want to see Will Ospreay go 1 hour with, you know, somebody. Well, okay, he's not going to appeal to you then, because that's not what he's trying to appeal to. He's trying to bring wrestling into a mass market situation where horror film fans say, I like that character. I'm interested in that character. Comic-Con fans and anime fans and Dungeons & Dragons fans and Magic the Gathering fans, all these different pop people who collect Funko, all of these different pop culture things Bray Wyatt's characters embrace. How long is it going to be, look on your watch, before the WWE sells the rights to Funko to manufacture every single one of those characters and Bray Wyatt? And probably a little funhouse diorama. How long is it going to be? Count the minutes, and they'll probably make half his salary by just doing that. The marketing appeal of what's about to come is going to be in league with Stone Cold Steve Austin and Hulk Hogan. The marketing appeal is going to reach way past wrestling fans, I'm telling you. And it's going to go into the mainstream pop culture fans, Mike, and that's the real value of a guy like Bray Wyatt.
Right. Think about it. Remember what happened when Hulk Hogan really got going? Well, we got the Rock and Wrestling connection, right? We got
right.
Hulk Hogan's cartoon, Rock and Wrestling, you know, that cartoon, you know. We got all kinds of different things that happened. And that was because that came after what? One, Vince bought the company off of his dad, and two, Hulk Hogan had to go down first, and then come back up, and he was Hulk Hogan. Before that, he was like Perry Boulder or something like that, you know. You know, he had
right.
to come. He had to go back down and come back up again. So yeah, it takes time. And look, how. You mentioned that Wyatt's six earlier. I mean, we've already talked about, you know, three. It's him. It's possibly his brother, and maybe what's her name? Alexa. You know.
It's very
you know,
hard to tell. That's the beauty. We don't know yet, and so we're all looking to the answer to these questions. As further proof of what I'm saying, I have a couple of Bray Wyatt or Fiend T-shirts, mostly Fiend, I guess. I have a hoodie, and I have a T-shirt that says, Let Me In. And I think I have a Bray Wyatt one early on that says, Follow the Buzzards. But when I wear that Fiend T-shirt, you'd be surprised how many people say to me, is that a movie? I'm a big horror film fan. I don't know, that's wrestling. That's a wrestler. Really? I stopped watching wrestling a long time ago, but what's that about? I mean, what is he supposed to be, like some kind of serial killer or demon, or what the hell is he supposed to be? And I explain it briefly, and I might have to check that out. It brings more eyes to the product. Remember what Paul Heyman said Friday when he was talking to Logan Paul? And he said, guys like you, we use to bring more eyes to our product. You're mostly a celebrity. You're going to get your ass kicked, but at the same time, all your little fans are going to tune in, and we know they're going to tune in, and maybe some of them are going to stay tuned in, and we're going to gain fans from you. That's how we use people like you. Well, he was saying that in, you know, character, but that's the Bray Wyatt thing too. You're going to bring fans into it to say, I'm not really big on wrestling, but they got a character like that. Well, I'm a big Friday the 13th fan. I'm a big horror film fan, or I like comic book. Maybe I should check that out because I might like that character. I have literally explained the Bray Wyatt funhouse and Fiend gimmick to people who stopped watching wrestling or never watched wrestling. And every single time the reaction I get is, that sounds awesome. That sounds really, really cool and creative. I might have to check that out. I'm not interested in seeing two sweaty guys just throw punches at each other, but what you're describing sounds cool. I might have to check that out. More eyes on the product. And then who knows? Those people who say, well, I'm not interested in two sweaty guys punching each other, may tune in to see Bray Wyatt's shtick and then say, Well, what's the problem with this guy? I'd like to see this Gunther guy get his ass kicked. Yeah, I don't like that guy. You know what? And who's that Irish guy that's looking to kick his ass? I hope he does kick his ass. Maybe I'll tune in. That's how wrestling works. You make them watch for one reason, and you hook them with the other reason. And pretty soon you got a wrestling fan. Bray Wyatt's going to bring a lot of eyes to the product, Todd, that maybe wouldn't normally watch wrestling.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when Bray Wyatt made his return last night, we didn't expect he was going to sing the whole world in his hands. And like you said, we've been talking about Karrion Kross. Book him against him. I like to see a feud with him and Karrion Kross.
That would be interesting. Now, if you're going to do that, then you're going to have to modify Karrion Kross's character a little bit, because I don't think you want the same thing with, like, Gunther and Sheamus, where it's like, well, we're not afraid of each other. Gunther knows Sheamus is tough, but Gunther loves a good fight and says, bring it on. If you think you can beat me, I don't think you can. I think Karrion Kross would have to be like, okay, I'm actually really am freaked out by Bray Wyatt. I don't think he's right in the head. You know, we're a little left to center, but he's way off the charts. You'd have to make Karrion Kross a little more nervous, Scarlett too, if you're going to do that. I have this weird feeling, though, that they're going to try to test the waters with Wyatt and see, can we make him a heel? You're going to fail. You're going to fail miserably. And I know Triple H once said, I don't care. If they're a heel and the fans are cheering them, that's okay. Let them cheer the heels. It doesn't matter as long as they're cheering. I firmly disagree with that stance. I get where he's coming from. Why does it matter who's popular? I get that. But then you're not helping the guy in the ring with him. That hurt Seth Rollins' career tremendously, if you remember. And you don't want that to happen. You don't want to start a feud with him and Cody Rhodes, because then fans are going to be like, well, you know what? Screw Cody Rhodes. I like Bray Wyatt. And then that hurts Cody. You don't want to do things like that. So you got to be careful. If you're going to test the waters with him as a heel, you better have somebody that's super popular that he's going against. And it sure as hell won't be Drew McIntyre. And it sure as hell won't be Roman Reigns, because he's popular too. I don't know where you'll go with this character. And that's, Mike, why I'm fascinated to see what might happen Monday or Friday.
Right. And that's the thing. And what have we said about, you know, people, how deep this roster is, right, in terms of, you know, we always say that they have people that have that back at catering, that, you know, Impact and guys like that would want, right?
Yeah.
So how many people are at catering right now that are doing nothing, that are possibly excited because Bray Wyatt's coming back?
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see what they do with this. But this pay-per-view showed me four or five things. One is this. If anyone has any question that the WWE athletes themselves are less gifted or less talented in the ring than anyone in AEW, you've lost your mind. Which we've all told you for as long as AEW has been in business, if you think any of these guys in WWE can't do this, you're very mistaken. They all can do it for the most part, just that they're not allowed to do it. Now, all of a sudden, they're starting to be allowed to do it, and you're starting to be able to see, oh, well, look what these guys can do. Who the hell ever thought Chad Gable could German suplex Braun Strowman or would ever be allowed to do it? But now with the new regime, they're saying, show your skill. Let's see what you got. Now with the new regime, they're not saying, hey, Imperium and Brawling Brutes, you guys can't steal the show. So you got to have a subpar match because we got to make our main event look better. No. They're saying, if you can steal the show, go out and do it. And guess what? Imperium and Brawling Brutes stole the show. They were far better than the main event. And nobody told them, oh, you can't pull out all the stops in the opening match. You got to save all those spots for the main event. Can't make our main eventers look bad. You don't get to do this spot and this spot and this spot. You're just the opening match. You just go out and have a short little nice match and count your money and go home. Not anymore. Now it's the handcuffs are off. Do what you want to do and let the crowd decide for themselves what they feel the real main event was. So that's number one. Number two, I'm now convinced that Triple H knows that wrestling has to be a blend. Modern wrestling, professional wrestling, has to be a blend of entertainment value, such as Bray Wyatt, and handing him the Empire, basically with the contract I already signed, handing him a huge amount of money to be an entertainer. And at the same time saying, but we need guys like Austin Theory and Johnny Gargano and wrestlers who can also provide 4- and 5-star matches in the ring on a regular basis. That's got to be a part of it too. I was worried that Triple H was only going to go the NXT direction of let's do the 4- and 5-star match guys and to hell with the entertainment value. I now fully realize he's not going to do that. So that's a second plus. Third plus is these pay-per-views have been on another level since he's taken over. These pay-per-views have been must-watches for the most part. This is two in a row that were A and A-plus type pay-per-views. And word is starting to get around. People are saying, oh, you missed it? I'm telling you that I had to miss it last night. I was away. So I had to watch it when I got home, which was very late. And I not only watched it when I got home in its entirety, tired as I was, I watched it in the morning when I got up again. And I was never bored. I was never like, oh, I'm going to go to sleep during this match. I was always engaged in it. And I'm starting to get that old feel for professional wrestling like I used to have, where I'm saying, even though I know who's going to win, I think I know who's going to win, I'm unsure, and it could go either direction, and that's the beauty of the new regime here. Triple H has his finger on the pulse a little better than Vince did. That's very obvious. And we're starting to see now what these performers can really do. They're given plenty of time. They're given plenty of promotion and ability to use the mic and sell their own fights, and we're starting to separate those who can from those who cannot. And that's the beauty of it. So I think the WWE is starting to become the fashionable federation again. And this should worry the hell out of AEW. Because I don't care what you say. I don't care what kind of a wrestling fan you are. If you're going to tell me that there's a single solitary worker in AEW that has the potential marketing ability or marketability of Bray Wyatt, you're absolutely wrong. There's not one single person that's even remotely close. And now we're starting to see some of the wrestlers step up and say, we're just as good as all those guys too. We can put on these type of matches if that's what you want. This has got to put, I think, AEW on high alert, Mike.
Absolutely. And think about it, you know. What did we say? I mean, we said it about Bray Wyatt that he put his price so high that not even the billionaire that is Tony Khan, who he's not really a billionaire, it's his dad, but that's neither here nor there, was going to pay it, right? But he knew that Triple H was going to come a-calling. So, obviously, yeah, he got a lot of money, but it probably wasn't what he was asking before, you know, before Triple H took over. And, hell, I mean, we said it with Triple H, you know, maybe time up, time away from it would kind of make him a better, you know, writer, booker, you know, and it could be helping.
Well, here's the thing, Mike, you know, when Triple H says, it's hard to work with Bray Wyatt because he's very creative and he's always like a ball of different creativity and it can be tough. I really admire his creativity, but it has to be reined in. You start to sell a bazillion t-shirts overnight and all of a sudden your attitude changes to like do whatever the fuck you want. You know, we can't manufacture the T-shirts quick enough. We can't manufacture the masks quick enough. We can't manufacture the hoodies quick enough. And all of a sudden, it's like, hey, man, do what you want. That's what I would do, and too. If I'm a business owner and somebody comes to me and says, I got this great idea, and I think it sucks on ice, but I say, well, go ahead, give it a go. And the next thing you know, money's rolling in. I'm like, whatever, man. You got another idea? I mean, why wouldn't you, right? Why wouldn't you? So, yeah, I mean, and listen, there are some people who don't like Bray Wyatt's mic work because they say, well, and I'll agree to a certain extent. Look, my favorite person on the mic has always been Mick Foley, especially in his ECW days when he did some promos that I said, well, you're never going to beat that promo, period, end of conversation. But Bray Wyatt still has that ability to, even though he's talking in gibberish, later on some of the things he says makes a little bit of sense. And you're like, well, it didn't sound like much when he said it, but now I'm starting to realize what he meant. So he has a little bit of a different style, but the magnetism of that character, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. You heard it for yourself, so you cannot deny it. I didn't think Bray Wyatt would get as big a pop as The Fiend got when they showed The Fiend. Because I was like, well, they blew the roof off for The Fiend, so Bray Wyatt's going to be anticlimactic. When he took that mask off, that crowd was electrified. He hasn't even done anything yet. Clearly the WWE now has all their ducks in a row. They have probably the top merchandise guy or the top marketability guy in the entire sport. In Bray Wyatt, and promo-wise, one of the best. You have several of the best wrestlers in the world, ranging from AJ Styles and Seth Rollins, and you have the Brotherhood, who is running so, so hot. You have Sami Zayn, who is clearly having the run of his career as the honorary Uso. You still have guys waiting in the wings to come back, like Randy Orton. You have Matt Riddle. You have your ducks in a row right now. The WWE has their ducks in a row. This is starting to shape up, Tom, to be a federation that you got to keep your eye on because, I mean, they literally have now organized themselves in a position where they can put on these pay-per-views on a regular basis that's going to be 4- and 5-star pay-per-views.
Man, I got to tell you, when back in 2018, I believe, when Vince, Stephanie, and Shane came out and said, we're going to listen to the fans, and we're going to give you what you want, and they turned out not to, and it was just a big flop. If they had done what they're doing now then, there would be no AEW. AEW would be delegated to an internet-based no ratings federation, indie federation. They needed to do this a long time ago. But the fact that they're doing it now, like I said, has so many people talking, so many people waiting for Monday Night Raw, so many people waiting for SmackDown even. I mean, you couldn't get a better opening promo on SmackDown with Paul Heyman. He nailed it. And they punked out. They punked out Logan Paul. He had nothing to say. And for what?
Yes, I know.
He had nothing to say. He was punked, and he ended up walking away. And I was like, okay, well.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else they did, Tom. I don't know if it was in the script. I'm going to ask Mike about this, too, because Mike's usually very good at picking up this. I don't think anybody told Roman Reigns about Sami Zayn's line about, we're the ones and you're the twos, is the Uso saying, and you're the biggest two I've ever seen, alluding to a turd. Because Roman Reigns actually broke character and started laughing, and at first he tried to hide it. And then he figured, I can't hide it, so I'm just going to make it look like I'm laughing on purpose because it's funny. But I do believe that Roman Reigns broke character there, Mike.
Yeah, he broke character. This isn't the first time. Remember the time that he was kind of sitting there making faces with some kid in the audience.
Right,
you know?
But at least that wasn't on camera.
That one, but see, again, this goes back to what you said earlier about Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn is having the biggest run of his career, and, well, you know, we're talking about what they might do with him turning him and all this stuff. Why fix what's not broken? You know? Right now, this isn't broken.
It's not broken, and it looks like the WWE knows it's not broken. Because clearly now they've put another chapter in, and the chapter is Roman Reigns has passed the torch to Sami Zayn to say, basically, you're in charge of Jay. That's interesting. Let's see where this goes. There's another great little chapter in the story. Bravo to WWE for basically saying, you know what, let's tell the story real slow because fans are enjoying it. Let's not rush to the end. That used to be the old philosophy. Well, when we wrote this, we have a beginning and an end, and it's 4 weeks long. And I don't care what's happening. At the end of the fourth week, it's over. Clearly had a beginning and an end to this, and it's clear now that they're saying, yeah, we're not ending it. Let's keep it going. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Everybody likes this. Let's just keep running with it until fans, just like they did with the RK-Bro. RK-Bro, I 100% guarantee you, was supposed to be originally Orton turning on Riddle, and then they said, maybe we'll do the opposite, Riddle turn on Orton. Then they said, well, look at the crowd, man. Just let it be. Let it be. Well, now they're letting this be. Let Sami Zayn have this big run. The fans are captivated by what's going on with the Brotherhood. Now you've got the fans captivated about what's going to be happening with Bray Wyatt and his crew. You've got a lot of great storylines running at once. You're very close to hitting your peak where fans are going to go back to saying this is must-watch television. And that has not happened, Tom, in a long, long time.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's what makes – that's really what makes the show. You just – it's almost like I have to – and I'm a big baseball fan. I'm a big Mets fan. And it was – the game was on the same time as SmackDown. And honestly, yeah, I don't think you touched on this, but Hit Row coming out and getting jumped by Selena Vega and her gang was the highlight of it. Was the second highlight of the show. I was like, thank God, I think I'm hooked now. I think I'm gonna go back to the game. I've never done that before. I was like, I have to go DVR SmackDown and watch the game. Not Friday.
Absolutely. Listen, I was dead tired when I got home. I got home after midnight because Peacock does not play the replay till after midnight, right? It's a three-and-a-half-hour pay-per-view. Not only did I watch every minute of it, I got up in the morning in time to watch every minute of it again because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything if I was a little sleepy, but I certainly didn't doze during it. There were times in old WWE pay-per-views that I wasn't even tired and I dozed. I'm like, this match is boring. The next thing you know, I'm like, oh, I will wake up. Oh, match is just getting over. It's not happening anymore because you're into all the characters. They're starting to understand that you have to be into the characters to care about who wins and loses. Now, here's an interesting thing. Two people last night blacked out their Twitter account, Seth Rollins and Liv Morgan, both who lost. Both who have now blacked out their Twitter account. I have no idea what that means. But it's odd. And it makes me wonder if there's some kind of a gimmick behind that. This is what professional wrestling has to do. They have to use the internet. They have to use their television show. They have to use all kinds of social media to engage the fans and attempt to lure them in or start storylines or buzz about what might be happening. When you start to do those type of things, that's when fans tune into your show. You've got to use all the tools necessary to bring the fans to that show. And right now, Todd, that's exactly what they're doing. And if they continue to do that, I think you're going to see huge numbers for both Raw and SmackDown this week.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Liv Morgan and Seth Rollins block out their social media accounts. And like you said, there's something behind this. There's got to be something behind this.
There just about has to be. In unrelated news, John Moxley signed a 5-year deal with AEW, so he's not going anywhere for 5 years. In case anybody was speculating about any kind of Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose reunion, that's not happening. So let's go to our match of the pay-per-view as well as our rating. I'm going to start with Tom. Tom, what was your favorite match of the pay-per-view, and what's your overall rating on the pay-per-view?
The match of the pay-per-view, oh, man, this is a hard one. I'm going to go with Bianca Belair and Bayley. I loved the first match with the Brawling Brutes and Imperium, but that was a great match, and everything they did made sense, but it just – and it was brutal. But I loved the ladder match. That was just as brutal, and the right person won. With Bianca Belair taking both the damage control out and then beating Bayley, that was a little ill-advised in my opinion. But again, I think that had a lot of legs. It was a good match. The rating on the pay-per-view, I was going to give it an A. But because I was so intrigued and captivated and just well satisfied with the Bray Wyatt appearance, I'm going to give it an A+.
Wow. Okay. So we get an A+ from Tom. My match of the night was the reason I'm not giving Bianca Belair and Bayley the match of the night is exactly what you said. I don't like the fact that she wiped out the entire damage control by herself. I think that was a huge mistake. And that took the match down one notch for me. I'm giving it to the Brawling Brutes and Imperium. I don't think anything was wrong in that match. I watched that match and said, if I was booking this match, this is it. It's flawless. It was literally flawless. It really looked like six guys kicking the living hell out of each other. There was no hesitation. There was no miscues. There was no timing issues. Everything was hard-hitting. Everything was solid. It just was a throwback to everything I loved about professional wrestling. And I'd watch it. I'd watch these guys fight 45 more times because I think I'm always going to be entertained. And I really see the makings of possibly a classic feud here that could last a really long time if the WWE wants it to. The overall pay-per-view, I'm going to give an A-. There's two things I did not like the damage control being wiped out by one person, and I did not like Finn Balor no-selling those spears. I think that was a huge, gigantic, colossal boo-boo. And I did think that the main event was a little underwhelming. So for that reason, it's an A-, but it's a really, really, really high A-, Mike. What's your thoughts on favorite match and rating?
Well, first off, I've already given you my rating. It's an A-plus
right.
With a gold star. So that's my rating. And I say by a hair, the Brawling Brutes, because I really did like the Bianca Belair-Bayley match. Now, I did say that Bayley does need to – she has the exact opposite problem that what you call it had before she left.
Becky.
Becky Lynch.
Lynch
had,
yeah.
She looks a little bit chunky, but it's a good chunky, all right? And you can maybe have her maybe lose 10 pounds and still look fine, right?
Yep.
Bayley. So that's my match, and you're right. This feud with these two teams is almost reminiscent in a different way to what they had way back when it was the Miz versus Dolph Ziggler. Remember, we always used to say we could watch those matches. We could watch 100 of those matches between those guys because it was so good at it at the time, you know?
Yep, and it's even more fun than the Miz and Dolph Ziggler because while the Miz and Dolph Ziggler were excellent at, you know, their chemistry was excellent together, Sheamus and Gunther, not only is their chemistry excellent together, neither one of those guys are afraid to really take a shot. I mean, I'm watching it and I'm saying, this is legitimately brutal, some of it. Some of this, that's going to have, that hurts. You can see it. And, man, that's so refreshing to see rather than this new school, oh, if you hit me too hard, like Sammy Guevara, oh, I got hit too hard. I don't want to work with Andretti anymore. One of those punches really hurt. And go in there against Gunther and see what he does. Go in there against Sheamus and see what he does, which is exactly, by the way, what Andrade said. Exactly what Andrade said. So, yeah, I mean, listen, I love the hard smash mouth wrestling. I always have. And, man, Sheamus is just having – I think Sheamus is having the run of his career. If you told me Sheamus is injured, I wouldn't think he could do the stuff he's doing. I mean, when Sheamus came back, they were saying, look, this is probably his last run. He has some serious, you know, medical issues that probably going to be shortening his career. I would have said, well, they're going to put him in a tag team, and he won't do much, or he's going to manage. Jesus, he's having a great run, and he's having some of the most brutal matches of his career. So you got to have the hats off to him. He's bringing a lot of fun back to wrestling where he's saying, look, you know, wrestling's supposed to be for guys who are tough. Not for people who break a nail and want a week off. So God bless them both. You know, Gunther and him are really bringing, like, that smash mouth wrestling back, which is what I like. So, yeah, that was, like I said, I'm A-minusing, but I also think it was a really fun pay-per-view. Really fun. I had a lot of fun watching it. Todd, what's your favorite match of the night, and what is your rating?
My favorite match of the night is going to be the Imperium and the Brawling Brutes match.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I got to give it an A-minus as well. The reason why I don't like it is because the Judgment Day, because Finn Balor was no-selling in that match.
Well, he definitely no-sold those spears. He didn't no-sell it immediately, but he forgot that apparently a minute later that he'd taken three spears. Let's go least favorite match while we got a little time. I hate to say least favorite match here because I'm going to tell you what. My least favorite match was still a really good match. By standards of normal standards, my least favorite match could have ended up being one of my favorite matches on a lesser pay-per-view. But on this pay-per-view, my least favorite match, I have to give it, unfortunately, to Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross. And again, I have a ton of respect for both of these guys. I think Drew McIntyre could be the top guy for a long, long time. And Karrion Kross really, really cemented my respect for him with selling that pepper spray, which I just thought was absolutely friggin' brilliant. Nothing short of brilliant. Made it so much, the whole thing was just made so much better by that. The little tiny attention to detail makes so much difference. So I have a world of respect for both of them, but they don't have good chemistry. And I don't know whether it was just, you know, the stipulation of the strap match that kind of drug it down or whatever, but it just didn't have an ebb and flow that appealed to me. So I'm going to have to say that's going to be my least favorite match. Let's go to Tom, see what your least favorite match was and why.
My least favorite match, even though it was a good match, was Riddle and Seth Rollins. I don't particularly agree with the type of match. If you're going to make that type of match, make it a last man standing match. At least you have room for things like counting out somebody when they're outside of the ring. Like, technically, the second floor of that cage was outside of the ring, and Daniel Cormier didn't count because you have to be inside the ring. I don't think that makes any sense at all. And I just make it a last man standing match. It's the same thing, just in a cage. It obviously was leaning towards, obviously, Matt Riddle winning it because it was his type of match, because he was former, MMA. That's fine, I get it, but it was my least favorite match of the night. I liked this strap match only because the psychology that Karrion Kross knew enough to sell, that's what made it for me, honestly. It was brutal. Some of their strap shots were pretty good, but the thing that did it for me, and again, like, not a lot of people probably caught this, but the fact that he sold the pep spray, that he caught a little bit of it, it really was a highlight of Matt Riddle and Seth Rollins. He had a lot of good spots, but it didn't really...
Probably just that dive by Riddle would probably have been the highlight, which was pretty good, but... Yeah, I could see that being your least favorite match. You're right about one thing. I agree with you 1,000,000% on what the hell is the difference. You might as well have just a last man standing match. It's not a fight pit. I kind of thought the fight pit was going to be like some kind of, well, I knew what it was going to be because I've seen it in NXT. But I thought maybe they'd modify it to just be like almost like an MMA thing where you're just two guys brawling it out, you know, in the confines of a smaller area or something. And I was like, well, what's the difference? You might as well have a last man standing match. Exactly. Last man standing match is technically more brutal because you can be counted out at any time, in the ring, out of the ring, it doesn't matter. You got a guy on a platform and he's out for the count of 30 and it's like, well, I didn't fall off the platform, so I'm still okay. You can't count me out. Seth Rollins is yelling at Daniel Cormier, counting him. He's like, well, the rules say you got to be down here. Why didn't you push him off? If that's the case and he's flat out and he's got to be on the mat to be counted, why didn't you push him the fuck off? I don't know. You're right. That is a little frustrating. But again, those are two great athletes. And they put on a great show. It's just, yeah, I think it was the structure and the actual match type that made that not as good as it should have been. That's my opinion. And you're so right about Karrion Kross. I want to know, and I'm going to try to find out, if he did that on his own or he was told, sell the pepper spray a little bit yourself. Because if he did that on his own, he has just jumped up about 3 more notches on my list because that, again, that's just using your head. And if you're that good at using your head in the ring like that, you're going to put on some great matches. It's inevitable. And just because this one wasn't great, because maybe your chemistry's not there, does not mean he's not capable. So I'll be interested to see if that was something that was written in the script or he just came up with that on his own logically. Anyway, folks, it was a great pay-per-view. And it's going to be a wait and see. Monday Night Raw's ratings are going to go through the roof. Can't wait to come here on Tuesday and tell you what Monday Night Raw's ratings are, because Bray Wyatt's appearance yesterday, last night, is going to drive those ratings probably higher than you've seen them in the past 6 months. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back here on Tuesday. You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.